Welcome to Full and Share Theology. We're your hosts, Justin Mercier and Bruce Pagano, and this is Theology for Everyone. Welcome back to Full and Share Theology. We're your hosts, Justin Mercier here with Bruce Pagano.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, and welcome to part three.
Yep, that's right.
Of our study through the book of James.
Hey, we're in podcasting. We call it our series.
Through the book of James. Yeah. Our series, our season,
I don't know. That's super Christian. Our season.
Oh, yeah.
We're in a season of studying James.
That's right. We're in the season of studying James. And let our words be marinated in salt.
Seasoned with salt.
Marinated
with salt.
Well, you know, whatever.
Let our words be dry rubbed and cured with salt.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of cured and dry rubbed, one of our friends got a Traeger, and I have not had the fruits of that labor yet.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have. And now he's doing softball. I did air quotes because I don't believe in sports.
You know what? It's one of those things. Like, I think I would like to do softball, but I think I'm better than I am. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, if I was playing softball, I'd smash it over the fence, and I'd be hitting bombs, and I bet you
that's probably because you pick up a lot of weight, and you think that
that
translates to every other sport.
Yeah. Well, I'm an athlete. You know, I'm an athlete.
I'm not saying – I mean, football, but football is different. Like,
right.
Like, you can't just smash through a baseball. Like, there has to be some accuracy. Like, you can smash through a lineman.
Yeah.
There doesn't have to be any accuracy to that. You just have to see this big, huge thing in front of you and plow it over.
Yeah, totally.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, and so that's the thing is I would like to play on a softball team one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to. Nobody ever asked me to play. I'm like, I'm a big dude. Could you imagine me as a first baseman? Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I'd be as long as you can catch, no one's getting by you.
I can catch for sure. Like, best hands in the game.
Oh, yeah. Because, Do you play softball?
Well, so I played baseball growing up. From age 5 until high school, I played baseball.
I'd strike out on T-ball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's
I like catch. Like, I like throwing a ball.
Yeah. No, I did really well in baseball. I was a pitcher, and I was a first baseman. I always hit fourth, what they call cleanup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was like grand slam position kind of thing. And I always had really good at batting averages because I was so much bigger that they would walk me a lot of times.
Ah,
so my at bat was really high.
It was really high.
Yeah.
We grew up in Los Angeles. Well, we grew up in West Covina, LA County.
Yeah.
And we went to Dodgers games
all
the time.
Yeah.
I remember like they'd have like fan day and, you know, like the 83, 84, 85 Dodgers. They would just set up, I remember they would set up these long tables and you'd get a picture of the team and then like just the whole team, like they'd all sign it. And then my grandma threw him in a box and a cat pissed on him, so there's that.
Oh, dang it. Yeah, no,
I loved baseball growing up.
Oh yeah, no, I really like baseball a lot. I know we're going on a baseball rant here, but what's so interesting about baseball is that for me in the big leagues is that literally by the time that the ball leaves the pitcher's hand, the batter has to already have made a decision in their mind if they're going to be swinging at that pitch or not.
Right.
Because by the time it leaves their hand to the time it's in the box at 90 miles an hour or 100 miles an hour, it literally is less than a second.
Right.
And so the fact that you have to, like, figure out by the time it leaves their hand, you have to start swinging already and made that decision. And the fact that there's 7 different, like, change-up and sliders and curveballs and fastballs and, like, it's really, like, the fact that even people hit home runs is amazing.
I would just... Every time I went to bat, I would just be angry. I'd be like, I didn't even decide yet.
Yeah. Hold, can you throw slower, please? I need some time to analyze this.
I would be constantly stepping out of the box.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Just give me a second.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm good. I'm not good. I'm not good. Yeah, and then I'd probably get hit with the ball. Like, he'd probably throw the ball at me on purpose.
For sure. I think one of my favorite things is watching these pitchers. Well, they'll throw a fastball down the middle, 98 miles an hour or whatever, and then they'll throw a 62 mile an hour lob, and the guy who's this professional whiffs it every time, you know, right. Because like they just train fastball, like all this kind of stuff. But then you throw like a 60 something mile an hour, and it takes so long to get there comparatively, and they just whiff so bad, yeah. And it's just like so funny to watch, because yeah.
it's like
even I can hit that
the,
maybe.
The difference though is they make millions of dollars for whiffing a ball.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You would make absolutely nothing for whiffing a ball.
Yeah, yeah, nothing.
Out there on a softball field.
Yeah, 100%.
Like,
yeah, and that's the thing is half the time those guys are like blasted anyway. So
do we have a baseball team? I guess like Boise BSU
Hawks.
Has a
Boise Hawks.
Oh, okay.
They're a
Triple A.
Triple A, I think. Yeah. They probably are a for farm. They're for the Colorado Rockies.
Okay, so they're farm league, farm right? league for yeah. Rockies.
So sometimes, like once in a while, you hear like, "Oh, did you hear that he got called up to the big leagues?" Like, you know, like, but then they sit on the bench just in all case, right. You know. Like, all right.
What though? I've said with every major sport. If you just need me to sit on a bench,
yeah, yeah,
100%, I'm in.
Oh yeah,
I'll work out every day. I'll be super physically fit. I'll be able to do the job if you need me to.
Yeah,
not well, but I'll do the job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you just need me to sit on the bench, any sport, call me up.
Right.
I'm not in my prime anymore, but I can sit on a bench.
Maybe not prime physically, mentally though.
Oh, mentally, I'm.
You're there.
Sometimes I feel like I'm slipping, but I think I'm okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know. Speaking of slipping, what are we drinking today?
I feel like maybe you had too much whiskey because that was horrible.
I almost want more,
yeah.
Honestly.
No, yeah. It's there. So today,
yeah,
we're just drinking our staple.
Yeah.
Woodford.
Yeah.
But I did get us new glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Like I got us cool,
yeah,
scotch or I mean bourbon glasses.
Honestly, glasses. They're really fancy. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of those like 70s homes. With I'll more. Yeah. If you're giving out,
yeah. And we got our Kentucky Derby, 148th Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
What is this like?
What is it like?
Tribute bottle?
Oh yeah, yeah. Kentucky, yeah. I mean, and it's a new bottle. I mean, it's May of this year. Like this.
Well, yeah, it's like the label on it for the Kentucky Derby. I think it was May 7th, 2022.
Which I don't know if I think I might.
But they were bottling it before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think I overheard that like the winner of the Kentucky Derby this year was like.
Oh, I watched the footage and it was stupid.
Weren't they like? Wasn't it like that horse was ranked very low to win?
Like,
and it ended up winning.
I saw a meme that was like, he was a replacement horse.
Yeah,
he was like $30,000 horse against like $1.2 million horses.
Right.
He was truly an underdog.
Right. People made a
started
lot
dead last. Like,
yeah,
nobody expected this dude to win, and he pulls out.
Yeah.
And I saw him come up, and I was just like,
yeah.
Holy junk,
man. That last little leg, and they turn it on. And
have you ever been to a horse race?
I've never been to one, but I've watched them a lot.
Growing up, again, Southern California, Santa Anita
Raceway
or race horse track. I don't remember. Santa Anita.
Yeah.
We would go. My grandpa would take us. My poppy would take us, and we would go watch the ponies.
Yeah.
You know, he's an old Italian dude. And
yeah.
One of the main things I remember is, like, we'd go watch with him, and then we would end up on the pier, and I remember, like, this is the first time that I ever tasted clams on a half shell.
Yeah.
A little bit of Tabasco and some lemon juice, and I was, like, 7, and it was the absolute worst thing I'd ever experienced in my life.
No.
But it's a fond memory because it was with my poppy, and...
Yeah. That's how I feel about mussels.
Yeah.
Mussels and clams. I don't know why.
I like them now.
I don't like them. Like, I'll do crab and lobster and
matter
all
of
that.
Fact, we went to Chandler's here in Boise.
Yeah.
And ordered the clams.
Yeah.
No, oysters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we ordered. It was so long ago.
Yeah. Clams.
Oysters. It was oysters.
Yeah, yeah.
And they fly them in, and they have like a team that goes down and like picks out the seafood. and inspects it and then brings it back to the restaurant every day.
Wow.
At the airport.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's so
important. Because we're in Idaho, which if you're not familiar with Idaho, 100% landlocked and not where you would expect to get decent seafood.
That's true though, because like the thing is that like you can't just serve bad seafood or seafood that's been at a certain temperature for too long, because people will die and get sick.
Right.
And so the fact that like they are able to do that is really amazing. But I'm sure hella expensive.
It was not cheap.
No.
But I mean, like, it's the only time we've ever eaten there. And yeah. It was an anniversary. Yeah. Or birthday or something.
I don't know why, but every time I hear like clams or that sort of thing, I'm always like aphrodisiac. You know, like,
because it's supposed to be.
I don't know. Like, it's funny. Like how
I didn't. I wasn't
studies were there that they had to like.
Yeah, determine. Like, but I don't ever remember eating them and being like hubba hubba.
Whoa, you look different.
We should go.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's because people eat it during special occasions and they're already have it on their mind that they're gonna do the business.
Yeah, right. Dude, I don't need that. I'll just take a basic Red Robin burger. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like,
be like, I want to do the business.
I'm like,
anyway.
Aphrodisiac. Then my wife's like,
your wife's like, that's gross. I don't like that. Please stop eating that burger.
Exactly.
You have mustard on your beard.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's for you later, baby. No,
it's like, stop it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, speaking of for you later, baby.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That was one of your transitions.
There you go. I like it. That was good. All right. So,
we're talking about favoritism, partiality.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying James. What I've kind of figured out so far about James is it's almost like this. It's almost like Jesus spoke, and then James comes through, and it's just like, did you not hear the word of the Lord? Like, right, you know, like,
do you not know what he said?
Yeah. And so I kind of like his look. You guys, I know you said like you don't understand it, because even Jesus was like, some of these parables you won't understand. But we got the Holy Spirit now, so let's start talking about it, because we now understand.
Like, right. Let's like your excuses no longer apply.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that's the thing that like I really do love, that it like it's just a reiteration of the Sermon on the Mount. And so not that it's some rarity or something like that, like the apostles don't do it, but the fact that James goes to like great lengths and like pains to just make this a reiteration of what Jesus said.
Right.
Is a big deal. Like, that's why one of the reasons I love it is because it's like, while he was alive, maybe his family was like, this guy's full of crap. Like, oh,
my brother,
the Messiah.
Yeah, exactly.
But now James is on this like, do you not know what he said?
Yeah, right.
Like, he was clear.
Yeah.
Like, if there's ever a time between all the like, I didn't say this clearly so that they wouldn't understand it, I'm going to explain it to you now. The Sermon on the Mount was not that. He was super clear about what it means to live within the kingdom. And it's time, it's high time that we begin living as if we're in the kingdom.
Yeah.
I had this thought, and we'll talk about favoritism here in a second. I tweeted it today, or I Instagrammed it today.
Oh, that reminds me. Yeah.
What?
Wolf.
Did you break another chair?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
I forgot to mention Buffalo.
Oh, yeah. The time this airs?
Next week.
Oh, this week. No.
Oh, yeah.
Thursday. So that's the same week.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's important.
You said that, and then I remembered.
It's really important.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, so, so just to give context is that there was a 18-year-old white kid, male, who lived in...
And I think that you lose the label of kid when you do what you did.
Yeah, for sure. So there's an 18-year-old man who drove from another part of New York, essentially 2 hours away, and drove to a supermarket, and in what he researched as a densely populated African American community,
right, predominantly black,
like premeditated, like looked up what do the most African American people live within a certain radius, and Buffalo, New York was the place, and he drove 2 hours with full military gear, bulletproof vests,
body armor,
that sort of thing, and
heavily armed.
And live streamed it nonetheless, like proud enough to live stream murder.
Had
like
a manifesto, from what I understand, online.
190-page manifesto.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Really, the big thing about the manifesto is that he believes that they call it the great transition, or what is it called? But anyways, this whole thing about how the conspiracy is that the government wants to kill off white people so that other nationalities can come up from the ashes and like be more included into society because there's too many white people, like, kind of thing. That's, again, conspiracy theory. Like,
right.
That's conspiracy theory. And so his whole thing about his manifesto is, I'm going to make sure that that doesn't happen. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to go kill African-American people. Like, that was his whole ordeal. And I can't remember what it's called, the great something.
Yeah, like, it's called, hold on.
Yeah, yeah, you almost got it. I know it was on, Tim Whitaker had posted it.
Yep. It's called the Great Replacement Theory.
That's it. Okay. The Great Replacement. So they're trying to, yeah. And that was his whole manifesto, is like, I'm going to make sure I'm restoring this thing because they're not going to replace us, like, so I'm going to go kill right. off.
And the theory is like, part of the theory involves like Biden welcoming in immigrants and refugees from other yeah. countries, and the browning of America, which is a real thing. Like, the browning of America is a real thing. Mm-hmm. But not because of some horrible thing, yeah. but like, it, like, increasingly we are there. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Like, yeah. I mean, like, there are yeah. immigrants. There's immigration into America.
Yeah.
And for all the attempts to halt it because of the fear of yeah. some nefarious goal, the idea is, like, Democrats are going to welcome in all these refugees to create voters, to create right. a voter base
right.
that will eliminate because the ability for white conservatives yeah. to
minorities particularly vote for Democratic, like,
right. Democrats. That's the yeah.
That's their whole thing. And so on Twitch, which Twitch is a very highly successful,
it's a gaming platform,
streaming
right?
Yeah. Service. He live streamed on Twitch and then went into the supermarket.
The first couple of people he shot in the parking lot were live, right?
Yeah. So he shot 13 people. 11 of them were African American. 10 of those 11 died.
Right.
And so he particularly targeted a small community with African American people in a supermarket. Like, he was like, I don't want to work for my murders, so I'm just going to go where people are. Like, and it's just a local supermarket.
That was
like,
kind of his.
I mean, it was just a cowardly move. Like, not that murder isn't cowardly in any sense, but like the cowardly move is, I'll just go where the people who are going to be the least armed.
Well, I think
that's a
revealing of the intention and the premeditation.
Yeah.
And, you know, CRT is our biggest threat.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like,
and so,
CRT is, critical race theory is our biggest threat.
Right.
Not a white nationalist, white separatist movement that is undergirded by evangelicalism.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
and it is just, and it was,
and
so
and it infuriates me. Did you, had you, so this week I learned about something which I'd known, I didn't know the name of it, but I learned about American Readout.
Remind me again.
American Readout is the sovereign, it stands for, it stands for fortification. Readout is like fortification. And so portions of Eastern Washington, all of Idaho, Eastern Oregon, Western Michigan, I mean Montana, yeah. We're not by Michigan,
no.
And Western Wyoming.
Yeah.
There's been this movement toward coming here and
creating an
state and creating this stronghold of, it's not race based, ironically 98% white, not race based, but like Christian based. But it's essentially white evangelicalism within this area. And we live right in the middle of it, like right in the, right in the base of it, which infuriates me. And I said something to a friend the other day about like, political refugees, like, or religious refugees, refugees. 'Cause I've heard multiple people say, oh yeah, we're from the People's Republic of California. And I'm like, did you just equate California with China? Like, did you like the place where you get to actively and openly gather as a Christian community with Bibles, and you sold your house for $1.5 million and you moved here, and you only have to go back to California once a month to work, and you don't have to work while you're here, and all of your income comes from California, so you don't pay taxes here. Like, did you just equate that place that you just moved from with a legitimate communist state that where you can't own a Bible? And where, like, if you are Christian, you don't have resources that you have, and that you willingly and unopposed were able to move from California to Idaho because you wanted to. And then you're going to talk garbage against immigrants who are actually fleeing violent countries in South America and Central America to wanting to come here for protection and freedom. And you just equated yourself to them because you had to wear a mask? Like, is that what happened? And I'm just like, that's ridiculous. Like, the mentality of that. And so, like I said the word religious refugees to a friend who lives out east. And he was just like, wait, what? What did you just say? I was like, religious refugees. Like, that's a thing. And he, like, that people are doing it. All right. Sorry about that. My son threw a ball and hit our bird feeder and broke it outside our window. So, anyway.
Bad birds.
Yeah. Yeah, now they can't eat, and they're going to starve to death and die.
Teach you how to poop on my cars.
It was for hummingbirds, though, and they're sweet.
You know, yeah, maybe.
Anyway.
Or the quickest jerks you ever seen.
Yeah, but my friend genuinely didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
And I explained it to him, and he was like, that's the – I guess that makes sense, but that's the craziest thing I've heard. And so this past we're actively living in the middle of that.
Right.
It's not made up. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's real.
Yeah.
And I don't understand the theocracy that we're trying to build.
Yeah.
That's not of Jesus. It is not of Jesus. Right. I don't care what you think. It's not of Jesus.
Right.
And so when things like Buffalo happen,
right,
one, it breaks my heart and it's garbage. Two, it makes me angry that the church doesn't respond differently and continues to lean on these public figures, which we're going to talk about favoritism here in a minute, these public figures who propagate this bull crap. Right. Like, it's garbage, but they propagate this bull crap. And critical race theory continues to be the most dangerous thing that we're facing as a church.
Yeah.
Are you bullshit?
Yeah.
Bullshit. It, like,
yeah,
I can't even believe you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hard time, and it frustrates me because today I was just like, stop pretending to seek unity.
Right.
Stop pretending to seek unity because you don't actually want unity.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You want to be right.
Yeah.
And not even in the realm of Jesus.
Right.
You just want to be right.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't understand. Today I tweeted the thing that I was talking about that was essentially, I think, that this move to create this theocracy, this Christian theocracy, is the new Holy Roman Empire. Mm. And...
yeah.
All of our
we talked about this.
Power grabs.
Yeah.
Where we're trying to control all the seven domains, the seven mountain mandate, which is garbage.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Not our mandate.
Yeah.
You made that up. And I'm looking at you, Bethel Church.
Yeah, right.
I'm looking at you because, like, you have pastors there that promote this, and we're not called to seek dominion over these, like to seek power in these and influence in these dominions.
Yeah.
We're just not called to that.
Yeah.
Jesus didn't seek for that to happen. And so that's the new crusade, yeah, is conquering these mountains, and we're not called to conquer these mountains.
Right.
And so that's, we have our own crusades for setting up this new Holy Roman Empire. And the only difference is we're not actively murdering people, unless you count Buffalo.
Right.
Like, we're not actively murdering people, but we are absolutely othering them. Like, 100%. We are absolutely creating them. Our goal is to seize power for the purpose of forced conversion.
Yeah.
And if they don't convert, we oust them. We make them the enemy. And that was this... the Spanish Inquisition, that was the Holy Crusades, and we're doing the same thing. And let me just say, for the record, any kingdom that you try and establish that that uses earthly systems, based on your perception of what the kingdom of heaven should look like, is not the kingdom of heaven, and Jesus is not for it. And like in the tweet I said, our mandate is to live as if we are kingdom citizens, loving all people, enemy, homeless, oppressed, widow, orphan, each other, other, God. I just included God in all people, but like God also, until Jesus comes and establishes his kingdom. That's it. That's our mandate. It's not to control education. It's not to control... like, that only happens in America.
Yeah.
And that should tell you there's a problem. If it's a thing that only happens in America and the rest of the global church is like, we don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, and that's the thing is like, I think it's just like so tough about it. It's like, you know, these are just innocent people. Like, and in the whole... like we like, I think that people like to brush off the Black Lives Matter movement, and they brush off like, oh, there's just a bunch of like, you know, protesters who just want to seek and destroy and cause blah blah blah, and it's like this guy, this 18-year-old kid, like literally was like,
I heard the creator or the editor of Babylon Bee talking about how it's a miserable life because they're just looking for all of the reasons that they. That they're oppressed, and they're like, people are scrambling to be labeled as oppressed. And I'm like, really?
And by they mean the African-American community.
Yeah. Anybody who primarily, yes, but like anybody who wants to be a part of the woke church movement, the woke gospel. And I'm just like, really? You think people are scrambling to be labeled oppressed?
Right.
And he was just like, they ignore what they have and what God's given them. And like, I'm like, oh, as do you when you don't seek to share it.
Yeah.
Like, it's the thing that you're saying is actually you.
Right.
But keep on, Babylon Bee. You're a warrior for the right.
Yeah, right.
And not like the conservative right, but like the right thing to do.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just like, you used to be funny. Now you're like, it's sad.
Right.
Your thing is sad.
Yeah. And it's just crazy. Like, this happened Saturday. And I surely didn't hear anything about Buffalo on Sunday. Like, you know, like I'm like, and now here's the thing is I didn't start seeing it coming through me personally until Sunday. I want to say, well, maybe it was Saturday.
Yeah. But it's just like, but there's this thing called social media.
Oh, I know.
Where church and religious leaders could get on and absolutely address their congregation.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it. And I follow a lot of big churches.
Right. Yeah.
One, because I want them to be accountable. But two, I'm always hopeful. I'm losing hope.
Yeah.
Quickly, I'm losing hope. But I'm always hopeful. And it just never.
Like, that should have been a chance for the church to be like, look, we're just going to mourn. Like, we're just going to mourn. Because,
like
a part of the white community othered people from the Black community, and like, especially in Idaho, like, we are a very white community, and it's like, churches should be the first ones that go, this isn't right. Like, this is not okay. Like, and it just sucks because
it's the problem is that like you can argue it. It is what it is. The white church. I was listening to a podcast today called You Have Permission. And they were talking about the white versus black church, like not like against each other, but just the differences.
Yeah.
And the guest, what's his name? I can't remember his name. I'll remember it. But the guest was like the Tyler Burns from the Pass the Mic podcast. But like he makes the point that the white church just hasn't been taught to lament and be sad and grieve. Yeah. And the black church has an entire doctrine, theology based around lamenting and liberation. Like,
yeah.
And so they, mm-hmm. like they grew up in this, we have much to lament and also much to hope for.
Yeah.
And we just don't like we everything's a celebration. Even when we talk about bad things happening, we talk about dismissing it and looking for the good.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is like, you know, I think I would love to explore someday the African-American church, like, because it seems like they get a lot of things better.
You might have to move away from Idaho.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like they get community, the understanding of community so much better. And like you said, like lamenting and like, you know, and here's the thing is like, I know that like when you look at like preachers and sneakers, right? Like, you know, you got pastors that are, you know, who are African-American pastors. And I'm sure a lot of them fall in the same temptations as far as like wearing Gucci and Supreme, but I mean, and like that sort of thing.
Like one of the points that the guest on You Have Permission talked, like one of the things that he talked about was he grew up in a predominantly black culture church, went to a predominantly white culture church, actually Liberty University, Thomas Road Baptist, where I have 2 degrees from, and then kind of is pastoring a predominantly black culture church. So he's got like he's seen both spectrums and he's been a part of both cultures and environments. And kind of one of the points he makes is often though, because of the predominance of white evangelicalism, a lot of black pastors grew up in that vein and have to kind of undo that. And even if they didn't grow up in it, when they go to seminary, they have to learn it to be able to be hireable. And lead churches if they're not going to lead a predominantly black church in a predominantly black community.
Yeah.
And so it's still more of the same.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Like, I just watched a documentary about Abercrombie and Fitch.
I don't understand why that was a documentary, but okay.
Well, the whole point of it was that they were particularly discriminating against minorities.
Oh, gotcha.
Because it was all white, blonde hair, six-pack, like, and, like, if you were a minority, your position was in the back, like, to go do sorting, and you weren't allowed on the front floor because you didn't match with
no shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And so, and they got
sued. Although, I have images of, like, Seal on Kiss by a Rose, and his shirt, like, flowing, and his abs.
Anyway. Oh, for sure,
That's the image I get.
But, like, it was the whole thing about, like, now, that it was the previous CEO, but the previous CEO, clearly, they were like, oh, you're a minority, like you're black or Indian or Asian or whatever. You deserve a place in the back room where no one can see you. But they were like, we would hire people that were just good looking. They had no credentials. They were just white and they were blonde.
They've never done anything in retail.
Yeah. But so it just saddens me that like we're still in the culture where it's just like, you think racism is dead? Like you think it's
But dead? Then people are going to be like, come on, man. You should be able to hire who you want. Like, no, I got that. But if you can't see that it's intrinsic to the system.
Yeah.
Even if you're not trying to be racist, it's still part of the system. Yeah. At least understand why it's part of the system and that it is still part of the system.
Yeah.
But that's, but that threatens power.
Yeah.
If I have to admit that, it threatens power. And,
yeah,
you know, I mean, like, I by no means have done significant work in the space of like racial justice and racial reconciliation and whatnot. Yeah. But even the little bit that I kind of speak out on it has cost me. Like, and
me too.
And it's that people don't want to give up. Like, I don't want to, I don't want to be removed. Like, I don't want to be questioned and challenged.
Yeah.
Because they're powerful and they get to say what's acceptable and what I'm allowed to do. They get to say whether or not I get to be a part of community and ministry.
And honestly, like, where I'm at now is I'm okay with that.
Right. I don't want it.
I'm okay with being told, you know, like the stuff that you say about Black Lives Matter and like equality and inclusion, like that there's no place for you in ministry because of that. I'm like, great. Like,
right. I don't want to be a part of that anyway.
Because honestly, like, and so maybe we should start getting into.
Well, let's talk about favoritism real quick. So I have a question. If this idea of favoritism applies to everyone, what about pastors? What about celebrity pastors? And we kind of like started touching on it a little bit.
And posers. Posers of wannabe pastors.
Posers of wannabe pastors? Who's that? Who's that?
People who want to be wannabe pastors.
Oh, yeah,
sure. And they try really hard.
But they don't have nice enough Versace shoes.
They're like, I got the Nikes that were like $80, you know, and you're like, oh bro. Like, yeah. They want to be celebrity pastors.
So what do you think of favoritism in that vein when it comes to, so I've been challenged before because, and I've told this story before, but I just think it's such a microcosm of the thing that we're talking about where it's like at a church that I volunteered at, volunteers get a free coffee from the coffee bar tea.
Yeah.
I was standing there one day and someone came up and was like, hey, the pastor wants a vanilla latte. And I was like, oh, is the pastor paying for the vanilla latte? Like, no, he's the pastor. And I was like, whoa, time out. So I only get drip coffee, but the pastor gets a vanilla latte.
Right.
Why? Well, because he's working all day. Me too.
Yeah, right.
And to be fair, I've worked 6 days this week.
Right.
He's worked 5 because we protect his Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, his Friday and Saturday.
Is that pastors get like a full weekends.
Right.
We don't get
that. So, like, yes, he has to work Sunday, but he works Sunday through Thursday. We protect his Friday and Saturday. I worked Monday through Friday and Sunday. And so he still gets a vanilla latte. Oh, come on, Bruce. And I got brushed off. Come on, Bruce. Whatever, man. I'm like, no. Why is he special? I love him.
Right.
But why is he special? Because he's on stage? Because he works harder than us on Monday?
Yeah.
I mean, on Sunday? Because he works harder than us on Monday through Thursday? Because I promise you, if it's a competition, I win. I work at a middle school. It's the worst place in the world to work. It's the absolute worst place in the world to be is a middle school. Well, in America anyway, maybe. Yeah. It's still pretty bad. And I would love the opportunity to sit at Starbucks and write a message.
Yeah.
And not that that doesn't take work.
Yeah.
I'm not diminishing that. But don't tell me it's harder work than suspending 5 kids, stopping a fight, finding drugs, pulling 12 kids out of the bathroom who are vaping, being yelled at by a parent, being threatened to be punched in the face by a parent. And then, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, don't tell me that.
Yeah.
And then tell me that he's working harder so he gets a latte.
Right.
And I know it's just coffee.
Yeah.
But it's the principle of the matter. And for me, I'm like,
it's othering people.
It's the thing where he's not special. And the way that we create celebrity pastors is by treating them special. And I'm not 100%. Saying he shouldn't get honor.
100%.
But he shouldn't get more honor than we get, for one. Because Jesus said, no, you don't get that place of honor. Yeah. But for two, he's going to be judged more harshly. Like, that's what he gets.
Yeah.
He gets to be judged more harshly
than
we do. That's what he gets.
Yeah.
And so favoritism for me, I'm just like, man, like this.
Yeah.
James 2.
And you want me to read it?
Yep.
Okay. So this is out of the NASB because we're hip.
Yeah. I've moved on to the CSB, but whatever.
Oh,
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Ain't no Bible like the King James Bible. You know what I'm saying?
The new King James, son.
Yeah, right. All right, so this is James 2. So, my brothers and sisters, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. If a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring, let's just say church. If a man comes in your church with a gold ring and is dressed in bright clothes.
The Jewish synagogue?
Well, sure.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. That's why I said church. And a poor man in dirty clothes come in, and you pay special attention to the one who wears the bright clothes, and you say, sit here in this good place, and you tell the poor man, go stand over there or sit by my footstool. Have you not made distinctions among yourself and become judges with evil motives? Listen, my brothers and sisters, God did not choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom he promised to those who love him. But you have dishonored the poor man, and it is not the riches who oppress you and personally drag you into court. Do they not blaspheme the good name by which you have been called? If, however, you are fulfilled the royal law according to this scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing well. But if you show partiality and you are committing sin and are convicted by the laws of as such violators, for whoever keeps the whole law yet stumbles in one point has become guilty of all. For he who said do not commit adultery also said do not commit murder. Now if you do not commit adultery but you do murder, you have become a violator of the law. So speak and so act as those who are to be judged by the law of freedom, for judgment will be merciless to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. I really like that a lot, personally. One of the things I think stands out to me right at the beginning is that Hillsong documentary we talked about. It is that guy that says, I don't even know if Jesus would be allowed in the front.
Right.
Because I think of the way I kind of think of Jesus is sandals, dust, the hems of his clothes in the dirt, and holding people who are crying and snotting and lepers. Could you imagine him walking up to the doors of Bethel or Elevation or Hillsong? And being like, I'm here for the service. And then being like,
I'd like to see what you're going to say about me.
Yeah. And then being like, oh, no, Jesus. Whoa, you are dirty, sweaty.
If they knew that they were, that it was Jesus, they'd pretend and let him in.
Oh, for sure.
If they didn't, they wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they would be like, why don't you stand back here?
I want to be careful there, just because I know congregations that are like, we go pick up homeless people and we bring them in, and that's awesome,
great.
I don't care about your Sunday morning.
Yeah,
I like that. That's fantastic if you're going and picking up people on Sunday morning and bringing them to church.
Yeah, put them in the front row with a buffet, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
so that's the thing, like, that's fine, like, you bring them to your church. If you're not meeting their actual physical tangible needs,
totally.
I don't care how many people you pick up and bring to church to be converted and saved.
Yeah.
If you're not undoing their
oppression or not
their oppression, but if you're not undoing their life circumstance, and sharing your good fortune with them and your grace with them, your Sunday morning doesn't matter. Like it right. just, it just like ultimately it doesn't matter. And so there's this, the thing I love about this is that James is literally quoting Jesus through this whole thing so far. Yeah. We're only in chapter 2, verse 13, up to chapter 2, verse 13. But up to this point in everything,
yep.
James is quoting Jesus. He's quoting the Beatitudes in this portion where he talks about sitting at the table. He's quoting yep. Luke 14. Like he's literally quoting everything that Jesus talks about.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so he's just reiterating this stuff that they were taught. And so I don't know, like we could go line by line and I got a bunch of notes.
Yeah.
But like I think it's worth mentioning, like as James talks through this, he's talking about like as we practice our faith, like as we actually walk out following Jesus in verse 1. He kind of proceeds through verses 2 and 3 to this point of he gives these clear examples of favoritism by contrasting wealth.
Yeah.
And makes these points like if this dude comes in wearing like fancy clothes dude comes in wearing dirty clothes.
Yeah.
Jesus talks about that in Luke 14 where he's like, if you come to a banquet and there's a spot at the head of the table, don't sit there because it's going to be embarrassing when the master asks you to move down because you don't belong there.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of using this same language.
Yeah.
It was men's group. We talked about it in men's group. Okay. Yeah. Cool. We talked about it on Friday. We just talked about it on Friday. Yeah. Cool. And so like he's talking about, that, like he's using that type of example, but he's also recalling in Matthew 6:24, where Jesus says no one can serve two masters, and he's bringing up that again too. Like he's bringing up that point, like you want to serve money and Jesus, and you can't serve both. There's this point here where you're not as special as you think you are because of your wealth, and either you serve money or you serve God. That's it. There's only one. And so this idea of like checks in the mail and
prosperity
gospel, literally from the mouth of Jesus, they don't connect. Yeah. They don't work with each other. They just don't work. Yeah. And so that's like verses 2 through 3. And he's like, it's so dense. There's so much stuff. So he gets into verse 4. He tells us that that these distinctions made among themselves are them categorizing other people. And we talk about that often, othering others.
Right.
And that there's this evil intent in there. That the whole point in verse 4 is that your intention, the thing that you want, is based in evil.
And it's the whole thing, like when churches have like dress codes and they have like, you know, how to conduct yourself and you like can't do social media. And it's like if they can micromanage you, then you can't really be yourself. And then it's like it's like so interesting to me, like how then like when someone comes in and they don't look the part,
they don't look the part. Yeah.
They're just like, oh, we have a dress code. Oh, like and here's the extreme,
may not even be that outward. It may just be an silent exclusion.
I know churches that like require you to learn the dance moves to their worship songs.
Right. I'm talking,
you're not dancing. Like,
I'm talking about it being even more subtle than that. And we've talked about this because you, like, I know that you've experienced this, mm-hmm. or at least you feel like you've experienced this, where you're like, hey, we feel like we'd be good for this thing in your church, this ministry, and it's just like, no, what?
Yep.
No, no. Like, you don't fit the role.
This conversation not too long ago.
You don't fit the role. You don't fit the
the
look. The whatever.
Yeah.
And I know we've talked about that, and whether it's real or not doesn't eliminate the impact. Like, the impression that's given is that, and I know people who. I'm sad to say that I've been a part of conversations that dismissed people that might have been really good based on impressions.
Dude, Dude, yeah.
And it's always under the guise of, well, I feel like the Holy Spirit's leading me to say this and not that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just think it's what really infuriates me is that the church will say, like, if you have a dead dream, like, bring it back to life. Like, right? You know what I'm saying? Like,
what does that mean?
Like, don't give up on your dreams God has implanted in you. And then you're like, I have this dream to be this position. They're like,
not here.
Oh, no. Like, you misunderstood.
Right.
Like, when you posted that thing on Facebook, we immediately judged you and went, nope, not ministry. Like, versus getting to know, like, the heart behind it.
Or they'll do this thing where it'd be like, no, that's a fantastic dream, man, but, like, it doesn't fit with our mission here.
How? So,
like,
you're filling a position. I'm telling you I'm qualified for the position. Like,
But even in the vein, I told a client today, we were talking.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, we put so much emphasis on calling. And then we use language like, actually what I told him was when I read different churches' mission statements,
yeah,
it drives me nuts that they're all different when Jesus gave us one mission.
Yeah. Right.
The way that you enact that mission, your strategy is different, but I feel like churches don't understand mission, vision, and strategy.
Yeah. Right.
Or, you know, whatever, like mission, vision, to see that mission fulfilled, and then the strategy at which you're going to implement that vision to accomplish that mission. But they all create these different mission statements.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, you're the same church. Jesus gave you one mission.
Right.
The way you want to see that mission played out should be different. Call it a vision statement.
Yeah.
The way you're actually going to implement that is your strategy.
Yeah. He calls it a co-mission.
Right.
Like, so why do you think that you have the ability to have your own mission?
Right. And that's the thing where it's just like,
you're undoing your ability to be co-missioning.
Right. And you don't fit, like, so, hey, I have this dream to, I don't know, feed the homeless in this town, whatever. And they're just like, oh, awesome. Yes, go do that. Not here because it doesn't fit with this mission. And I'm man. So the thing Jesus said about the sheep and the goats, about feeding people who are hungry and doing it for the least of these that was doing it for him, is not part of your mission?
Right.
Well, no. Yeah. Not ultimately. Like, it's not a thing we're going to do.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Appreciate that.
Do you think that churches who don't go feed the homeless and they don't clothe the naked and they don't give drink to the thirsty or give food to the hungry, but say that they send money to do those things?
So I'm going to contradict myself.
Do you think that that's really the same thing?
I don't know. Like, I'm going to contradict myself here because I used to think if one church could do, like, one physical church could do all the things that God wanted done in a city, there'd be one church.
Yeah.
And I justified multiple churches with the idea that, well, one church can't do all the things that God wants done in the city, so multiple churches have to take up that mantle. And they're all going to have different aspects of seeing that mission fulfilled. But then I've seen churches try to interact with each other, and it not go well, and them get really frustrated about their thing not being the one that everybody else wants to do. And them separate from each other and be like, well, unity doesn't mean uniformity. We don't all have to be doing the same thing to accomplish, like, the will of God. And so now I question that. So the place that I'm at now with that is, I'm not out feeding the homeless, but I'm giving money to people who do.
Yeah, but the God doesn't say to give your money to feed the homeless. He says, go feed the homeless.
Right, but also, like, they, as a community, sold. I mean, like, you have to be reasonable about what you do.
Yeah.
And so, like, should I be feeding all the homeless? And financially, it's just not even a possibility.
Sure.
I guess I could feed one person. Yeah. But if I give $100 a month to some organization that's focused on feeding large amounts of people, and is that beneficial? Maybe.
Yeah.
My problem is...
Or is that just, like, the easy route? And I'm only saying this for myself. I'm like, is it easier just to be like, I don't want to go feed the homeless. I've got no time.
No.
I'll just send my money to hopefully it'll be used.
I don't know. I think it's complicated, and I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the same time, I think I've been a part of churches that think that they're doing the most important thing in the city.
Yeah.
And when another church comes up, they don't want anything to do with them, and it's very rivalry based. Yeah. And I have a problem with that because that's intent of heart.
Right. But this is what this is what the Muslim church will do is in Kenya, for instance. I have a friend who's a missionary in Kenya. He says what happens is that the Muslim church will go into a village and they'll say, "Hey, we have enough money to build you a hospital, a school, food, and jobs. Like, we will literally transform your village to a self-sustaining village where you have all these resources. All you gotta do is convert to Muslim, like into Muslimism. What's the
Islam?"
And they go, "Great." And then they convert to Islam. And then my missionary friend says, then he goes in those villages and says, "Hey, like, Jesus is the truth, the way, and the light." And they go, "Yeah, but Jesus didn't give us the hospital and the school and the food and the resources. Islam did."
Right.
And he says that it's the most disheartening thing because they're like, "No, but I'm here to build you a well. Like, I'm going to build you a well so you can have clean water." "Oh, we don't need that. Like, we got that from Muhammad, you know, like, or whatever." And it's just like, it's that whole thing where I'm just like, it wars in me because I'm like, it's like, man, we are so at war with each other as a Christian church that like, we can't even decide to go feed our homeless people. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we can't even decide to do that well. And so it's just easier to give money so that maybe the organization we give money to actually does that. But then like, the homeless population doesn't change in our area.
Yeah.
So where does that money go to?
Right.
You know, and so it's
overhead administrative costs.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they had to have more staff to manage the finances and the billing. And here's the thing is like, I did homeless ministry in San Francisco, and like, we walked through the food lines and like, we were given food, and we went to like a coffee shop that gave free coffee and like, muffins out to the homeless. And like, we did that, and it was awesome. You know, it was really, really cool. Like, it was really cool. But they were giving food and drink to the homeless who would come, but it's like, they didn't like, reduce the homeless population. So it's just like, I don't know, it's just tough. But then the Bible says the homeless will always be among us.
Right.
So, yeah. Anyway, I know it's like a kind of a tangent, but it's like, it's just
no. But I think it's worth the wrestle. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I just want to love people. Like, I just want to love people, and like, and I think that there are times where somebody's like, "Oh yeah, like I this is not a boast on myself." I told my wife this. I literally went to Dollar Tree and I was like getting. I just got a couple of items, like literally maybe like $10 worth of items, $15 worth of items. And the lady in front of me, like, she was just getting some basic stuff, like $5. $5
right.
of the stuff.
Right.
She swiped her card, and the lady was like, "Oh, sorry, it was declined." And she was like, "Oh, I don't know why it's declined." And she swiped it again, and it got declined again. And then she was like, digging around her. She's like, "Okay, I don't know if I have enough money. Maybe just put back the one thing." And I was like, "No, I'll take care of it. Like, I'll just take care of it. Like,
right.
It's $5. Like, I'll take it. You just go. I'll do it." And I was like, "Just add whatever she needed instead of giving my stuff." And it was like, not that hard. Like, it really wasn't that hard. Now, if she had like $100 of stuff, I probably wouldn't have done it because I know I have $100.
Right.
But like, I hope that.
But it wasn't something like, "I need to pray about this and see what God wants me to do."
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
No. Like, God would want me to pay this $5.
And I was like, "I can do $5. I can do $5. And like, and I just did. And I never talked to them. I didn't talk to them about Jesus or anything like that. But I would hope maybe in like some way that they would be like, "Whoa, like, Jesus showed up today."
Right.
Maybe.
But I mean, like, do you have to?
I mean,
according talk to about Jesus.
Oh no, I don't think so. No,
but
by the fruits of their labor, they'll know who I am.
Right. Yeah.
Like.
Yep.
Do I even need to say anything? You know what I'm saying?
And maybe like.
Yeah.
But I like. I think discipleship is a product of relationship.
Yeah, yeah. But I could have like been like, oh, that lady is just a poor druggie
or something. Deadbeat.
Yeah, yeah. Came in $5. Like, that's how I could have. And like, that's the thing is, like, when I think about this passage, and I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but like, this would be like, if you had the ability, if you, like, someone came up to you and said, yo, did you know N.T. Wright is looking to have lunch with you? Like,
oh, yeah, we talked about that.
Like, he's going to have lunch with you. You would, like, dress to the nines, shave, like, right. Smell good.
He's going to be in Waco, Texas, and in, like, June 5th through 8th or something like that. And I'm like,
yeah, yeah.
Can I get down there? Can I afford that?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm willing to travel. Like, I'm willing to. But, the guy who just was like had marriage problems and drug problems and like drinking and that sort of right. thing and wants to go to coffee to like talk about life, and you're like, maybe I'll roll out of bed and put sweats on.
Right.
Like, maybe.
Right.
We value.
If I don't miss the meeting.
Yeah, yeah. We value the influence more than we do the people.
Right.
And it's more of like, I can post NT Wright on my Facebook. We had a selfie and I went to this conference. But there's no way in heck anyone's going to know that I'm going to hang out with this dude, because
right.
if I hang out with this dude, they're going to think, oh, that dude has marriage problems, drug problems, drinking right. problems. And, like, Jesus didn't care about N.T. Wright's big conference. He cared about the one who needed help. Like,
right.
But we, like, it's the same thing, like, if it was, like, Steve Young, you know, being a Niners fan. Oh, my gosh. Or Jerry Rice, you know, like,
right.
I would do whatever I could to meet with them. But I don't have time for people who are loathing, self-loathing, and like problematic.
Yeah,
you know?
who might cause problems for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want people to cause problems for me.
Yeah.
So we're at an hour and we've gotten through four verses.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 Or we can keep going, make it a two-part, or we can.
Well,
I know.
It's almost 9:30.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say that. Like, the next few verses,
yeah,
verses 5 through 8, mm-hmm. are kind of this side tangent. Where I don't think it's ultimately a side tangent,
yeah,
but like in that space, James is kind of like coming back to the space of reiterating, hey, the thing that I'm talking about the poor. Is this thing that Jesus was talking about the poor in spirit in the Beatitudes, Matthew
5.
Yes, Matthew 5. But also like that all Jesus said about the wealth distracting from leading away from the kingdom in Matthew 19:23, where he said the rich entering the kingdom, it will be difficult for them.
Right.
Like, he's getting to this point.
Yeah.
He's collecting this thing where he's saying, like, you show favoritism, but what Jesus says about them is that it's going to be difficult for them to enter heaven.
Right.
And we know enough people. We've had enough conversations with people that are about, like, wealth, like creating wealth and
totally.
And creating this, like, God wants me to prosper type mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll never struggle again.
7 steps, babe.
Right. But that idea that I'll never struggle again.
Yeah.
Because I make smart financial decisions, to me, bucks against just the idea of the gospel in general, where it's just like, Jesus said, you will struggle, but take heart, I've overcome the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And somehow we convince ourselves we're not going to struggle.
Right.
Right. And so James is kind of addressing that. And then he jumps to this this idea in verse 8, and I want to read it. In verse 8, he's like, if, however, you are fulfilling the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing well. And so he jumps back to this idea that money's a non-player here.
Yeah.
Status is a non-player here. If you are trying to follow this law that Jesus reiterates as one of the most important parts of the old covenant, that you love your neighbor, then you're doing well.
Yeah.
And he like in verse 9, he like jumps it back to that whole idea of partiality, where he's just like, if you are focused on partiality, on favoritism, you're not going to do that well. You're not going to love your neighbor well. You're not going to follow like one of the most important tenets of the law and do well. Yeah. And when he says do well, he's saying like be viewed well. Remember way back when we talked about the Sermon on the Mount,
yeah,
and we talked about righteousness was not just about like right relationship with God, but that the Israelites would have attached it to right relationship with people too. Like you can't have right relationship with God without right relationship with people. You just can't have it. For them, it was a foreign concept. You didn't get right with God if you were not right with people. And so this is what he's touching on there is like, if you're not able to love your neighbor, which is the tenet of the law that makes you right with God,
right,
then you can't
yeah,
be right in general. Like you are playing favorites and it's connected to the law. You can't separate the two.
See, I mean, and it even continues with the do not commit adultery or murder. And Sermon on the Mount says, if you're just angry with your brother, you've committed murder.
Right.
Like,
yeah. If you lust, you've committed adultery.
Yeah. So it's like, don't you try to show favoritism when you are breaking the law yourself? Like,
right.
You know, let me see. Judgment will be merciless. Yeah. And I think that was interesting. The very last part of it, the judgment will be merciless for those who show no mercy. I'm like, dang.
And so for me, like that piece, because I'm actively writing about mercy right now.
Yeah, right.
Actively is a really generous word. I'm supposed to be actively writing about mercy right now.
You're thinking about actively pursuing writing.
Yeah. And I've written, I don't know, like six chapters. Yeah. Some of them are partial chapters. But anyway, this is not partiality. This is not about just mercy that's about withholding punishment. Like this is about mercy that is kindness or good towards the afflicted, mm-hmm, joined with a desire to help them. And so when he gets into verse 13 here and says, for judgment will be merciless to one who has shown no mercy, mercy triumphs over judgment. He's saying when, like, from a person perspective, because that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about just God towards people. He's talking about people towards people in reference to how you relate to God. Yeah. He's saying, look, God, your lack of care for other people and desire to help them,
yeah,
impacts your ability to receive help from God.
Right.
And so it's not about having mercy, having punishment withheld from you. That's not the type of mercy that he's talking about. He's talking about, look, your ability to, like, the thing in you that moves you towards those who are afflicted,
right,
and creates a desire in you to help them and undo that affliction,
right,
is the thing that allows you to experience that from God.
Right.
It's not that God doesn't want to do it for you.
Right.
He absolutely wants to do it for you. But if your heart is not set the same way as his, you will not receive it from him and you won't experience it.
Right.
And that's the thing he's talking about. So like he gets into this law of freedom in verse 12 right before it, where he's talking about like freedom. It's not about doing whatever you want, but literally it's liberty. It's the ability to admit the things that that are connected to salvation in Christ, and living as you should. And the way that we should live is that mercy piece.
Right.
Like our freedom is living in Christ the way that we should live, and the way we should live should be towards mercy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's it. That's it.
Right.
And then he gets into this whole faith and works, which we're going to talk about next.
Yeah.
In the next episode. And literally he's talking about the thing, doing the thing that he just said that you should be doing.
Yep.
They're not separate. It's not about just believing and doing things. He's literally talking about favoritism and doing things that undo affliction,
yeah,
and communicate lack of partiality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not what you think. It's never what we think.
I know,
it's never what we think.
Right, right, right.
So.
Never what we're taught.
Yeah. It's never what we've been taught.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the sad piece, is a lot of this is, like, not what we've been taught. Like, nope. Or, you know, here's the thing, is not, sometimes it's not even what we've been shown. Like.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, man. I'm like. There is something weird about when your entire church looks all the same, and they talk the same, and they use the same language, and they do the same classes, and it's like, I don't know, man. I'm just like, something, like, you're selling something here. Like, you know, it's like, why can't we be different? Like, why can't we, like, express things differently? Like, and it's just like, it's that whole thing. It's like, oh, well. We have favoritism towards people who.
But they would never say that. They would never say it out loud.
No, but their actions show it, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, living the brand, living the vision, living the. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if you get your whole congregation to wear the sweatshirt and the shirt and the hat and the bumper sticker and the. You know, and the retweeting of the reposting of the sermon, or, you know what I'm saying? Like. I don't know. It's like when you don't buy into it, they will oust you.
And right. Yeah.
Here's the thing, is that if you're saying something that's contradictory to what they're saying, and then you're ousted, like, and actually I sent that to you. You'll know who your master is by who will come down hard on you when you question them.
Yeah. You sent me that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to know who is lording over you, question what they're doing and watch the reaction that happens.
Right.
You know?
And it was more of a, like, you'll know who's trying to master you.
Mm-hmm. By who you can't
question. By who you can't question.
And that's the whole thing, is, like, I remember the moment when I had questioned a pastor. And I said, I don't think he's right. And, like, someone in the group was like,
Yeah,
and I'm like, no, actually, I think that this pastor's wrong. Like, I don't think that they're right about this. Wow, like the fierceness of, like, I don't think you understand. Like our pastor is right, and he's justified in that, and he is, you know, he knows what he's talking about. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I think that he's wrong. You know, it's not your position to question, and it's like. That's who's lording over you. Like, right. That's who's trying to manipulate you and master you. And I see it so clearly more now. Like, I'm like, wow. Like, okay, I get it now. Like, I get it.
And it doesn't it suck?
It 100% sucks. Because it's no longer about Jesus, and it's no longer about, like, doing the co-mission of Jesus. And it's about what's my vision and my... like, my lead and my purpose. Me. It's all lead pastor or lead, you know, staff or whatever it is. And they lose out on the commissioning with Jesus. And when they lose out on the commissioning with Jesus, it no longer becomes about Jesus, it becomes about them.
Right. And that's the thing that I talk about today, is, like, you're not trying to build Jesus's kingdom. Yeah. You're trying to build your kingdom.
Yeah, yeah.
Using an earthly system that Jesus doesn't approve of, because he said, my kingdom's not of this world.
Right.
And it's just like, there's a reason why every other theocracy that's been a Christian, you know, quote unquote Christian nation has failed.
Like, if you go to the corner and you build a coffee stand and you just throw a Dutch Bros blanket on it, people will be like, oh, Dutch Bros. And, like, they would be like, I know it's going to be hip-hop and friendly, and they're going to be halfway in your car and halfway out of your car, and they're going to be – and it's like – and all I have to do is I just have to put the blanket of Dutch Bros, and I'll be successful. Like, okay. That's it.
I'm just going to say this. Okay. Nobody outside of the Pacific Northwest knows what you're talking
Starbucks,
about.
Starbucks.
So, like, Starbucks. Our people in that listen in Australia are like, yeah. I don't know what you just said.
Yeah, yeah.
But what he's saying is that there's this very specific coffee stand
in
the Pacific Northwest that's very much like in your face and super nice. And like, there's a very specific aesthetic to going to this coffee shop.
Yep.
And you can't just put up a stand and throw a sign up that says, we're this company. And then, and like, people will initially be like, oh, that's the thing. That's the Dutch Bros. And they show up there, and then you're not that thing. Eventually, they're going to be like, oh, you're not. You're not Dutch Bros. Or they're going to sue you. Like,
yeah. But isn't it funny that churches will do that, though?
Yeah.
Churches will create a building, and they'll throw the Bethel Elevation Hillsong blanket on, and then people go, oh, I'm familiar
with
this.
But I just wonder, and this is what I said to you. I think it's all the same model, and that's what makes it the same church. Like, you might have different aspects.
Right.
But you're not trying to be Bethel. Maybe you are, but you're just trying to implement the same model because it was successful for them.
Of course.
And so, yeah, you're trying to be Bethel, but you don't want to be Bethel.
Like,
you don't want to be Elevation. Although I've had pastors say we're going to be the Elevation of Boise.
Right.
And that didn't work out real well.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the whole
thing. But the key is you're not trying to build the kingdom of heaven. You're trying to build your own kingdom.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's just not illegal to just take ideas that are already been done.
And I'm for it. Me and my friend had this like open source ministry. Yeah. We called it open source ministry. Like, if we create something and you want it, take it. Mm-hmm. I think Craig Groeschel's, I can't remember the name of his church, but Craig Groeschel's.
Capital?
No, that's Mark Batterson. But Craig Groeschel's very good about like providing free resources. Anything they create, I'm pretty sure anything they create you can download. Even when live streaming started becoming really kind of a new thing, like networking
2020
churches. It was way before
that. Oh, wow.
they started creating a network to help churches do that, to create video campuses, and it was free. It was free. Like, they are about open source ministry. And me and my buddy Thomas are about open source ministry. So I'm all for, like, you want to create something and give it away. Don't create something that's garbage, that's not useful, and that's not of the kingdom, and give it away, and then call it the kingdom. Like, just call it, like, market it under your brand, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to charge. Anyway, we're at 116.
All right.
We barely made it through that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably didn't talk about as much as the back end of it that I wanted to, but that's okay.
You know, we can maybe retouch on it next time.
Yeah, we will, because we're going to talk about faith and deeds.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about Mr. Deeds. Did you ever see that movie?
I did, yeah. Okay. Adam Sandler, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
For sure. So.
It's back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I just wish that would happen to me. I'm like, $40 billion? I could use a $40
billion. Yeah.
I won't spend it all on one record player, though. You know what I'm saying? Like,
true that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
All right, very good. Well, thank you for checking us out. And that was part three. Look for part four coming up soon.
In this 78-part series.
Yeah, right. Yeah. On two discs for $19.99. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you'll be hearing from us next week. And for part four, chapter two, last half of chapter two. Can you believe it was five chapters of this thing?
I know. Yeah, we're almost halfway through.
Yeah, you know, we're almost there. So, all right, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Keep on following God's word each and every day, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, peace out.
Peace. Thank you for listening to Fold and Share Theology. You can follow Bruce on multiple social media platforms at bpags2, as well as Justin Mercier on Instagram at justinmercier13. Additionally, you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Folding Chair Theology. Until then, keep unfolding God's word each and every day.